National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2. I'm Marvin Herzog, and I am interviewing Edgar Michaels on March the 20th, 1992. Ed, I'd like to continue with you in your description of your life and times as an official of the city of Pittsburgh. And I would like to know just a little bit more about the relationship that you had not only with your fellow council people, but with the mayor at that time. Won't you tell us a little bit more?
City Council in Pittsburgh had a reputation of being a rubber stamp. The Democratic organization selected candidates, put them in office. The mayor's post had been held for many years by David Lawrence. His successor was Joseph Barr. The city had gone through a renaissance period with the cooperation of the city financial interests, particularly the Mellon family and the Democratic Party, and people were delighted at the kind of accomplishments of a city that still had a very vital steel industry. Working class had good jobs, the problems of the city were being abated, the smoke was overcome by new steel manufacturing methods. We were cleaning the city up, we were building new skyscrapers, and there was kind of a peace in government. The city still was stable, while the 50s and the 60s saw some moving into the suburbs. Fortunately, the city did not have the kind of racial problems that many other cities unfortunately had, and things were moving along. Primarily, you had Democrats in city government, you had Democrats in federal government, so if there were urban needs, there was money coming from the federal government to support whatever urban needs were. Joseph Barr, who had been mayor for many years, and I was getting up in years himself, and I was not well, and determined that he no longer wanted to serve as the mayor. During the last years of his service, a couple of Democrats had come onto the scene, man by a young, attractive a lawyer by the name of Pete Flaherty, was serving on the city council. A gentleman who had served in city government before by the name of Harry Kramer had moved on to the Common Pleas Court bench, was also considered a candidate. In the primary of 1969, the one in which I had run city council, Harry Kramer opposed Pete Flaherty. I was a Kramer supporter, but while almost all of us, in fact, who had supported Kramer were elected city council people, Harry Kramer lost, and Pete Flaherty, this attractive young candidate with a good-looking wife and good-looking family, was elected mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. Pete was a conservative in city government, felt that the payroll was excessive, that the rapprochement between industry and government was not good for the community, and so broke off the traditional ties. When he did this, he suddenly caused virtually a revolution in the community, because the community had learned to depend upon the major corporations and the people who headed them, and upper-income people who were supportive of our arts and our museums and our zoo and whatever, were now embarrassed, became disconsolate with the way things were moving, and just turned their back on the needs of the city. And Pete found himself kind of going it alone. The tax base was now starting to erode. The steel companies were removing their operations. It was very apparent that the city was changing its direction. The council now was faced with the dilemma of trying to maintain those traditional roots, and I found myself very much embattled in maintaining the relationship. Having come from a business background, I served as the chairman of the Finance Committee. During the Barr administration, there had been a decision to build a new stadium, recognizing the University of Pittsburgh needed to expand, and Forest Field was antiquated and ought to be replaced with a new facility. And I found myself with a $40 million stadium that needed to be financed, and no one had made real arrangements to finance the stadium that had been initially considered when bond funds were available at about 3%, and now bond costs were easily double that. At the same time, there was a feeling that the expansion of the institutions, which sit on tax-exempt properties, were expanding too quickly and were not providing income to the city. The mayor then decided to attack that situation, but this, in my opinion, was a mistake because they were providing jobs, and that was very necessary as the steel industry was drying up. Once again, I found myself fighting that battle. It became apparent in cities throughout the United States that we had need for emergency medical services. In this area, it had been a tradition that all health activities were conducted through the county health department. The county had no history of being supportive of the city in these kind of needs. And so Pittsburgh, while at the university, it was the center and the pioneer in developing emerging medical systems for the rest of the country, we here did not even have such a service. And we had to appeal to the mayor that this was, in fact, not a health care department. Health department function, but was really a public safety need, and we were fighting the battle to bring about emergency medical service. These were some of the significant problems I found myself encountering. There was a need to upgrade our water filtration plant, which we were able to do with federal funds. The need to create a shelter for the juvenile delinquent, where parents could reach it, build a new and more proper facility, and make sure that the county did not place it out in the rural areas, but bring it into the center of the city where transportation would allow parents to reach their children. I found the service part of it interesting when I could deal with some of the significant problems. Was dismayed by some of the housekeeping responsibilities that do not require really that much expertise, but do take up a fair amount of time. City Council then, as I said, consisted of people coming from various walks of life. The pay was not significant. It had to be a labor of love rather. Today, I'm dismayed to find that each council person has a $70,000 budget for aides. I don't know if those are aides or really people who allow them to stay in place and help them with their political battles. We had no such funds available to us. In fact, as finance chairman, I would not make them available. Our budget at that time was in the $125 million range. In order to do that, you did it all manually. It was service. It was public service.
Was it during your tenure that the stadium was built? and the air was cleared, and that Pittsburgh gained the reputation in the entire country as being a Cinderella city, a Renaissance city.
It was just starting to get that kind of reputation. Actually, the air had been cleared a few years earlier, but the stadium, which was close to the central business district, certainly made a dramatic statement and added to the excitement. Civic Arena had been built a few years earlier. It was a new type of structure with a retractable roof, and this got a lot of attention to the community. The real difference, if I were to say, is the fact that we have, over the last 20 years, suffered a declining population. Also, unfortunately, an aging population. It seems apparent that many of our younger, more able people go away to school and do not return to Pittsburgh. Although in more recent years, I think anybody who has come to Pittsburgh has been surprised and has found the city delightful. Housing is not expensive. Pressures are not great for that. Apparently our school system is a sound one. So people find Pittsburgh a pleasant place to live.
And I take it that you're glad to be, to remain and intend to remain a member of this community.
Yes, I in fact just served 6 years on the City Planning Commission. That interesting, dealing with development, zoning problems.
Just to change the subject, Ed, I know that you've been on a continuing basis, been an active member of the Jewish community, not only during your early years, but post-World War II. You're a member of Rudolph of Shalom congregation, of course. And I think you also served in some capacities in the general Jewish community as well. Can you tell us something about your work there?
That's so obvious, I perhaps have forgotten.
Yeah.
I had, during my years in the service, I was on the West Coast, in fact, in Los Angeles, and attended for the first time in my life a reform service at the Wilshire Boulevard Synagogue, where Rabbi Edgar Magnin was holding forth, a dear friend of Solomon Freehoff's, and I enjoyed the service, felt very comfortable with it, said certainly when I returned to Pittsburgh, this will be my calling, and I was delighted to join Rudolph Shalom when I returned. As a young married, I was very active in the junior congregation, served as an officer in the junior congregation, and then moved on to the Brotherhood, where I went through the chairs and wound up president of the Brotherhood and served as chairman of the Jewish Chautauqua Society, enjoyed that kind of work, and then served on the temple board for 8 years. Some interesting experience while I was president of the Brotherhood. Became aware of an organization called Brothers Brother, who dealt with problems in the underdeveloped countries, and brought to the Brotherhood Dr. Hodgson, who was the founder of Brothers Brother, and with the cooperation of other members of the Brotherhood, we Dr. Hinkson was the founder, and we contacted the major pharmaceutical manufacturers, and were able to get a donation from the Lutterly Company of what we thought were 50,000 doses of vaccine, all-purpose vaccine, which we would take to Costa Rica. When we told Dr. Hinkson of our find, he said, "Gentlemen, you've made one mistake. you could not give a full dosage in that community, so you don't have 50,000 doses. What you have is 100,000 doses. Now, we thought getting the drug was hard enough. The more difficult was how are we going to get the inoculations performed. So we put together a group of people being not of the medical background, but of the political background. I was part of the advance corps who went down to do the political job of telling him we came with veiled interest, but purely the good health of the children of that community. He met with their minister of health. What was perhaps the most interesting experience of as you sat around and tried to convince people that you were there with no ulterior purpose, and we were successful in getting them to cooperate with us in doing the job of getting out into the community. And then a couple months later, we formed a group of people consisting primarily of doctors and nurses from the local medical establishment, who then went forward and went into the various communities with buses and loudspeaker systems and whatever it took, and were able to give out most of the doses.
Was this a brotherhood project?
Oh yes, this was a brotherhood project. Primarily members of the brotherhood were involved at various stages of it. And I was pleased to say that perhaps whatever my time spent on brotherhood, this was certainly meaningful to me. Pleased to say I was associated with it. Some of the other experiences I've had in recent years as Gorbachev took over as premier in Russia, there was some feeling that perhaps refuseniks could be visited at a function. Rabbi Mark Statement turned to me and said, "Someone tells me you're the kind of guy who would go visit refuseniks." I said, "I didn't know that I am that kind of a guy, but I guess if you say so, that's the kind of guy I am." I didn't know that the gal I was married to was that kind of a gal, but when I said, "Would you do it?" she said, "I'd be scared to death to do it." I said, "Well, if you're scared to death to do it, then I'm going alone." She said, "Well, if you're going, I'm not going to sit behind you and worry about you, so I'm going to." So we told Mark that we were on, and we were ready, and we would be one of the first, and we were one of the first groups of Americans to go during the period of Perestroika and Glasnost to visit refuseniks. Coincidentally, quite unusually, I was telling this to a Presbyterian friend of mine who said, "My God, that's very interesting, but I don't view that as a social problem. I view that as a problem of social justice, humaneness. It's not a Jewish problem at all. Could I go?" Well, I didn't know how the Jewish Federation would accept a non-Jew, but they saw, as I saw, unique opportunity for us to expose this to an audience. So Chandler and Louise Ketchum joined us on this trip to visit Russian refuseniks. We were well briefed. We were there about a week. And we were given each of us, and there were nine of us on the trip, roughly half and half men and women, and we were able to visit on the average about two families a day. Families were pleased. We were obviously worried for their safety, but they assured us that they were thrilled that they were not forgotten, and that we had remembered them. And they were just marvelous people. And the most thrilling part I can tell you is every one of those people today is out of Russia. They're either in the States, in Canada, or in Israel. My experience, and from what I saw when I was there, never did I dream the changes that have taken place in Russia in the last few years, just a miracle.
It took, it seems, an immense amount of courage for you and your wife to make a trip of this kind, particularly in view of the political situation and the relationship of the Jews in Russia with their government. Did you feel while you were traveling that you were in any danger at all?
There was no question that there was hostility toward Western visitors, whether they be Americans or English or whatever. Maybe a little extra jostling on the subway, where we would jostle back a little bit. And, we know that we were watched, that the people who you would guess were be sure to bus drivers or whatever, really members of the KGB. We were not, we didn't feel that we would be personally in danger. We were quite sure that our rooms were bugged in the hotels. No question about that. That we may not have been important enough for them to care is quite another matter. Did some of the rank and file suspect that we were passing out small gifts that could be of some real value, whether it be a pocket radio or a wristwatch or whatever, that perhaps some refusenik in the black market could get some real value. And when our suitcases were examined, I think it would be apparent to some of the inspectors that was so, but it was accepted and we were allowed to get away with it, so to speak. Some of these people had been in refusal for more than 10 years. Some of them were outstanding scientists of renown. Others were purely people who had everyday jobs. None of them particularly practicing Jews, but aware of a Jewish background, and knew that they were being denied opportunity because for no other reason than they were Jewish. I think that's the thing that I have always been concerned about, that someone's life is altered negatively for no other reason but because of race or origin or religion. That bothers me greatly, you know, always has.
Are you presently engaged in any Jewish-oriented activity in Pittsburgh?
Other than I continue to be a member of the temple, I am engaged in other activity that doesn't have a particular Jewish orientation that I'm quite involved in right now, and that's housing for the special population, dealing with people who are either elderly, crippled, single-family parent, impoverished, who have special housing needs and the social necessity that it's not a matter of housing alone, but the environment, the drug problem, whatever, that they're faced with. That's a particular concern of mine right now.
Ed,